This is Harv Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast, and when I start my workday, it always begins with that morning shower. Normally, I use a liquid body wash, but recently I purchased a bar of Sterling Soap Company's handcrafted bath soap and decided to give their Deep Blue Sea handcrafted bath soap a try. Immediately, the aroma of Sterling's bath soap was obvious, and in using this soap, I felt refreshed, clean, energized, and Sterling's bath soap helped me step out of that shower with the momentum and eagerness to get my day rolling. If you want to get a refreshing wake-up call in the morning and get your busy day off to the right start, I highly recommend going to Sterling Soap Company's website and order one of their many varieties of bath soaps among other products they offer. Visit Sterling Soap Company at sterlingsoap.com. That's STIRLINGsoap.com.
Welcome to the Statman and Robin podcast. We are the dynamic duo of Baltimore sports history. And I'm Jim Johnson, the Statman, with my partner, Robin Haynes. Robin, how you doing?
Doing great, Statman. I've known you, most of almost our entire lives as Jim, but I got to throw Statman in there once in a while because it's a newly created nickname just for this podcast. So got to make use of it. And it fits.
Maybe I've evolved to a higher level of being.
Okay.
I'll wear that one by the wife and see what she thinks.
I don't want to think too much about that, but yeah.
Yeah, please continue.
Okay.
On this level.
I want to start off with a summary of one of the most memorable regular season series in Orioles history. It was the final series in 1982 against the Milwaukee Brewers. So again, remember in 82, we have two divisions in each league. And also, some folks might not know that the Brewers were in the American League really not that long ago.
Yeah, that's right. People can be so used to them being in the National League. Yeah, they came in the American League. Yeah.
Right. The Milwaukee Brewers, who used to be the Seattle Pilots for 1 year in 1969. That's another story. But for Baltimore Orioles sports fans, the final series in 82 is the definition of the word bittersweet. Mm-hmm. So the lead up to that, the Orioles got off to a really crappy start that year. In April, they were 2-10 at one point in April and lost 9 games in a row at one point in April. So they were kind of climbing out of a hole, more or less the whole season. But as things were coming down to the wire in September, the lead up to the Brewers' closest competition, was the Orioles. And there was before this final series in Baltimore, about 10 days before that, 7 to 10 days, there was a 3-game series in Milwaukee. The Orioles were actually 3 games out going into that series. And the Orioles lost game 1 of that series, so they're 4 games out. So the Orioles were in a position where they pretty much had to win the next 2 games, and they did. They won games 2 and 3 in Milwaukee. Now, if you're an Oriole fan from back in the day, and if somebody mentions the name Bob Scooby to you, it might ring a bell, but you might not remember why. And the only reason reason I remember this guy is game 3 in Milwaukee, the Orioles were clinging to a 3-2 lead in the bottom of the 8th.
I got it.
And this guy, Bob Scooby, who did not stick around with the Brewers very long. anyway, it's 3-2, one out, and Scooby is on third. There's a fly ball to center field, and Orioles center fielder John T-Bone Shelby. Remember him?
Yes, I do.
So he caught the fly ball and threw a strike to home plate to gun down Scooby at the plate, and the game, the Orioles still had the 3-2 lead going into the ninth. The Orioles did end up winning 5-2, But everybody who saw that game, because that game was broadcast locally on a Sunday around here. So anyway, that's the big, definitely Bob Scooby's claim to fame in baseball history.
I remember
He did.
squealing at that throw when he got him, because that was a throw.
It was a thing
Man.
of beauty.
Bad Shelby couldn't hit, but he could play center field.
Shelby had his moments as a hitter.
Moments.
Had some power. But then so basically after that, the Orioles were scheduled to go to Detroit for a three-game series. Milwaukee went to Boston for a three-game series. The Orioles proceeded to lose the first two games in Detroit. Milwaukee won their first two in Boston. So basically, the third game of each of those series was on a Thursday. The Orioles did manage to beat the Tigers, and the Brewers lost the third game in Boston on Thursday, which set up the series, the final four game series in Baltimore, with the Orioles three games out with four to play. So you got to win them all.
Sweet.
And you and I were there for the twinight doubleheader on Friday, October 1st, again against the Brewers. Going into that game, the Brewers had a guy named Pete Vukovich starting game one. Now remember, the Brewers only have to win one game and it's over.
Right.
And Pete Vukovich, let's look at him up a little bit. I don't remember him being that great of a starting pitcher, but he was the best the Brewers had at that time, and he did win the Cy Young Award that year.
Thought he did, yeah.
But one of the most amazing things that I saw in when I looked at his stats for that year, he won the Cy Young with a WHIP of 1.5.
Wow.
I really had to do a double take at that. But
He
anyway,
walked a lot of guys, didn't he?
yeah, I think he had trouble with putting guys on base,
Wow.
You know,
1.5.
if you're a Brewers fan and you're going into the first game of that series and Vukovich is the starter, you're like, okay, let's just win
Montreal.
one over with, put the Orioles out of their misery. But in game one, the Orioles won 8-3. They had 15 hits and only one home run in that game by Ken Singleton. So they're still alive. And another interesting thing, the Orioles struck out as a team one time in that first game. But
Oh,
a
don't you long for
convincing.
those days?
Hard to believe, isn't it?
It really is.
But a convincing 8-3 win. Game two. Another thing about that, and you and I were there, I don't really remember this that much, but so it's a twinight doubleheader. It really did not start until close to 5:40, 5:45. And that first game went 3 hours, and so the second game started at 9:19 p.m. I looked it up to the minute.
Apparently,
So,
yes.
and
At least that was a good game.
I don't think either one of us had to work the next day. I had to
No.
work some weekends back then, but I think that's the only way we got through it.
Yeah.
Game two, the Orioles won again, 7-1 with 13 hits. So 28 hits total for the Orioles in the doubleheader. That game, the Orioles brought out the long ball, and it's really about the only time in the whole series that they did it. Eddie Murray had a two-run homer in the first inning. That set the tone.
Yes, it did.
And then also Len Sicada, T-Bone Shelby, who I mentioned, and Cal Ripken, who was in his first full season on his way to the Rookie of the Year award. He also homered in that game. Storm Davis, lots of Orioles fans remember him. Complete game in that. Only gave up six hits and one run.
Very
So the
good.
Orioles sweep the twinight doubleheader. Another thing I remember, I believe in the second game, because the Orioles were just pounding whoever the Brewers had on the mound.
Yeah, it didn't matter.
It didn't matter, and you know, at one point, Milwaukee went to the bullpen for I don't know how many times they had done that by the second game. But I just remember us and the fans around us, and probably a lot of fans, were just kind of waving the next guy to come in on the mound.
Yeah.
Like, come on in,
Yeah.
buddy.
No, it doesn't matter.
We're tearing everybody up. If we did it the first game, we're doing it in the second game. So come on, because we know that you don't have anything either. I don't think the Brewers' bullpen was much to speak of overall. And it certainly wasn't in this series, because I'm going to get to that even more after after this doubleheader in games 3 and 4. The Orioles kept pounding. Game three.
Well, before you jump to that,
sorry.
Just a couple quick notes on that. First off, I don't remember being in a more wired Orioles crowd than that night.
Yes.
That
yes.
was incredible. And that was just so much fun because there was a lot of tension about the games, but when you're knocking the ball around the park, it really relieves the tension, doesn't it?
Exactly. And another thing that the crowd built on Friday was everybody was on their edge of their seats on Thursday evening. The Orioles had to win in Detroit,
oh, yes.
and Milwaukee, did us a favor by losing against the Red Sox. So,
well, and
we knew we had a shot.
I wound up with a ticket. Usually, you were the ticket guy for the Orioles, but I worked at a place, a large company that had an employees club, and they had invested in 4 season tickets for the Orioles. So you went in March. And you put in your money for the 4 tickets and you drew a date. And I drew that date. I sat on those tickets for over 6 months.
Wow.
And I was bummed out.
I had totally forgotten about that.
No, I'll never forget that because I'm like, man, I got to wait 6 months to use because they were really good seats. You know,
yes, they were.
The third baseline about halfway up. They were sweet.
Yep, and lower level.
Yeah, well, I wonder what we could have scalped them for, but we never even talked about it, did we?
Oh, no
there
way.
Was no
way.
Thought of that.
I'm also fairly certain that was not originally scheduled as a doubleheader. I think there was a makeup of a rainout from earlier in the season.
Well, and here's what happened. See if you remember this. There was a game in the first series. It wound up as a tie, and then got stopped by rain.
Ah, that's right. If you look at the records of both teams,
right.
They both had a tie.
Right.
And the tie would have had to have been against each other for them to potentially end up tied.
And it only happened because the Brewers catcher in that game, Ted Simmons, lost track of how many outs. And he kind of rolled the ball back to the mound and the tying run scored from third base.
You know what? Now that you mention that, I remember that
happening.
I wouldn't have been able to pin it down to 82 in the Brewers. I remember that happening in an Oriole game years ago.
So that wound up forcing the tie, which then forced that game to get added to that night. So, I mean,
so that's why it was a doubleheader.
What a sequence of events.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you could remember that because that is an incredible thing incredible circumstance that brought this doubleheader and made it a reality, I guess you would say.
Yeah, and I think that game would have been back in June.
Okay. So it was months before. Wow.
Yeah. So there you go. Please continue.
Okay. So anyway, the Orioles sweep the doubleheader, and I do remember reading some accounts from the Brewers clubhouse at that point. They were not feeling too good because they knew they had to face that home crowd the next day, Saturday.
Yeah.
In fact, it went even worse for the Brewers in game three on Saturday afternoon. The Orioles won 11-3. The Orioles had 18 hits in that game. No home runs, 11 runs.
Mm.
So up to that point, the Orioles had scored 26 runs in the first three games, 46 hits.
Wow.
An interesting thing that happened in that game in terms of the pitching for the Orioles. So Scott McGregor started, and the Orioles got off to a lead, 3-0, 3-1. And in the fourth inning, Scott McGregor was taken out of the game after giving up the tying run by Earl Weaver. And let's not forget, Earl Weaver I think prior to the season starting, had let it known that this was his final season.
Yep.
So this is Earl Weaver's final regular season series. So anyway, Earl Weaver decided to take out Scott McGregor. The score is 3-3. He brings in Sammy Stewart, who was just very rated as a guy in the bullpen. I mean, he could do anything. He could pitch long relief. He could start, which he did quite a few times. Sammy Stewart proceeded through the rest of that game, 5 2/3 innings, gave up 2 hits, no runs. Another interesting thing about Sammy, the previous year, 1981, he led the American League in ERA.
Oh, that's right. He pitched enough innings to qualify.
Yeah. He got just enough innings. Again, he was a guy you could use in any situation. Now, some people looking ahead to or looking back on game four, which we're going to get ready to talk about, some people looking back on that feel like maybe Earl Weaver panicked a little bit by bringing in Sammy Stewart at that point in the game when it was 3-3. And you look at an 11-3 game. Well, if Weaver had known that the Orioles were going to score 8 more runs, he ain't bringing in Sammy Stewart. And the other thing that Earl Weaver knew that he had in his holster, so to speak, was Jim Palmer pitching the next day. So Earl's mindset, do whatever you have to win this game so we get to Palmer in game four for all the marbles.
Absolutely. It's sudden death at that point.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And Gregor was not pitching well.
Right. And, you know, benefit of hindsight, the way things turned out in game four, you would have loved to have had Sammy Stewart available. But, you know, he clearly was one guy that was not available after going 5 2/3.
Right. You just had to get to Palmer and have the game.
Exactly. Exactly. And 82 was a big bounce back year for Jim Palmer.
Yes, it was. Last hurrah, basically.
It pretty much was. Pretty much was. Because Jim did pitch in 83, you know, got certainly not nearly as many innings pitched as he normally did in his career. But by 84, June of 84, he was done.
Yep.
But anyway, the Orioles did win the first three games. Now we go to game four on Sunday afternoon. Again, it's a tie. Win the game, you win the division. So, again, we have Jim Palmer versus Don Sutton for the Brewers. Really great matchup, but I think all Oriole fans going into that game had an incredible amount of confidence. We had all the momentum, and we have Palmer. How can it go wrong? Well, unfortunately, it did. Game four, the Orioles lost ultimately 10-2, although it was a 5-2 game going into the ninth inning, and we'll talk about that a little bit. So I'm sure if you remember anything about that game, one of the most disheartening things was second batter of the game against Jim Palmer, Robin Yount, who was the MVP that year.
Yep.
Hit a home run into the right field stands. Brewers are on top right away. But, you know, there's still hope.
Oh, sure.
And another guy the Orioles had on that team, which I don't think too many people would remember, they had a guy playing third base named Glenn Gulliver, who played for the Orioles a little bit in 82 and even less in 83. And that was the extent of his major league career. In the bottom of the first, he got on base and there were two outs. He's on second, and there was a base hit to right field. And he ran through a stop sign at third base and was such a dead duck by 20 feet, it seems like.
Yeah, I remember that.
That was the third out in the bottom of the first. But it was such a deflating thing. Some people say that Glenn Gulliver got in Earl Weaver's doghouse at that point, and you know, Weaver was never going to forget it. Now, he did try to redeem himself later in the, I believe it was in the third inning. He got the Orioles on the board with his only career home run in the majors.
Whoa.
But him getting thrown out Again, just
I've
totally
heard.
missing a third base coach. There's just no excuse for that. So as the game progressed, you could see that Palmer just didn't quite have it. He gave up three home runs. He gave up another home run to Robin Yount and another, I believe, to Cecil Cooper. And the Orioles weren't doing much at the plate. It was 5-1, though, going into the bottom of the eighth. And the Orioles did scratch out a run, and they ended up having the bases loaded with two outs, 5-2 game. And the Orioles brought up their number two catcher, a guy named Joe Nolan. And I can still see this play vividly. such a heartbreak. Bases loaded, and we had a fast runner on first, the potential tie run. Joe Nolan hits a rocket, a left-handed hitter, but he hits it down the left field line. It's not in danger of being foul, but it's kind of heading for that left field corner.
Oh, yeah.
Brewers left fielder Ben Ogilvie, not known for his defense, made this incredible sliding catch in the
Yeah.
corner for the third out. If he doesn't catch that, the game is tied because
Yep.
there's two outs, everybody's running. So that was kind of it for the Orioles
I
because,
can see that play now. I hadn't thought about that for a long time. That was a great play.
Top of the ninth, the Brewers did end up scoring five more runs. So that game was definitely over then, of course. And then finally, to kind of, summarize the whole series. Again, Earl Weaver, it's his last game for the Orioles. As it turned out, was it really? That was another chapter a few years later, but at the time, it looked like this was it for Earl Weaver. Howard Cosell was in the booth for that game on TV. This was on national TV. And instead of focusing on the Brewers' celebration, which they certainly had a right to celebrate, I have to give Howard Cosell credit because he focused on an exchange that was going on between Brewers manager Harvey Keene, and it was on the field. It was like kind of right outside the Orioles dugout. And Harvey Keene, to his credit, came over to Earl Weaver and was basically kind of consoling and embracing Earl Weaver because he recognized the moment, and so did Howard Cosell. Was pointing out to the national audience what an incredible moment it was for the opposing manager to do that, and just recognizing that this was Weaver's what looked like it would be his last game at the time.
Yep, Keene's a
Again,
classic.
yes. So very, very hard to get over. Just made the Orioles winning the World Series the following year, it just made it that much sweeter.
The bounce back. Well, and everybody kind of had their felt like they were let out of jail. Because the 83 manager, Joe Altobelli, had a much different style. Let's just put
Yes,
it that way. And
very.
that worked for that year.
It sure did. It sure did. And you know what? There were some players that, after you played for Earl Weaver for a while, you respected him as a manager. It doesn't mean he was the easiest guy to get along with. So there were some veterans that felt like, you know what? I would really love to go all the way without Weaver as the manager here.
Yeah. And they did.
And a final thing I got to point out about that four game series as far as the Orioles bats. So I mentioned they had 56 hits through, I'm sorry, 46 hits through three games. They got 10 hits in the final game, game four. That's an average of 14 hits per game. Team batting average for the four game series, 378.
Whoa,
And
whoa.
how many four game series have there been in the history of Major League Baseball where the team batting average approached that? I could not find anybody that ever beat that. I did find the highest batting average in World Series history for a team was 310 by the Angels in, I believe, 2002. Now that was a seven game series, but anyway, the Orioles hit 378 and just couldn't come up with game four.
Yeah, because they did score a few runs. on that Sunday game, but not enough. Yeah. Well, and I'm going to insert this here instead of at the end of the broadcast, because as I was getting up to speed on this, I went back to, you know, looking at the 1980, and you mentioned that game before where they had to beat the Tigers to ensure that the Milwaukee series meant anything.
Right.
And they wound up scoring four runs in the ninth to make up a 5-2 deficit and win 6-5. So it was like a similar situation in the Milwaukee game, except this time it went the other way. And here's, I want to, you're not going to know this. Because I didn't know this. Maybe you will. I don't know. The starting pitcher that night was Mike Flanagan, and he didn't have it. And they pulled him with nobody out in the fifth inning and two runners on. And the Orioles already down 3-0, or 3 or 4-0. I'm not sure which. And they brought in somebody that they had called up as a reinforcement from the Rochester farm team. And he pitched 5 innings, 1 run, 3 hits, as they say, kept them in the game.
Yeah.
And it was just enough for them to win. This pitcher won the game. He went to 2-0 and never pitched in the major leagues again after that game. Yeah.
You know, now that you mention it, I do vaguely remember the dramatic comeback on Thursday.
Yeah.
And again, that's just another thing that had the crowd so hyped up for Friday.
Right. We were coming off a great game. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it looked like the whole weekend against Milwaukee wasn't going to matter. I cannot, for the life of me, remember this pitcher's name.
Nor should you. His name is John Flynn, and his career record was 5 wins and 2 losses.
Okay, and I do vaguely remember that name.
Yeah.
But
he actually had pitched for Milwaukee 2 years prior, and they let him go.
Okay.
And the Orioles had drafted him, and they re-signed him, and he pitched, let's see, how many games did he pitch? He pitched 5 games that year, all of them in September, after the September call-ups.
Wow.
But, yeah, they must have been really short on pitching to put him into that situation. And he had his moment. And that was it. He did not make the team in 83. He had a bad year in Rochester. Orioles let him go. Nobody picked him up.
Nobody ever picked him up.
He wound up in Hagerstown in Class A in 85, still trying to make a comeback. Didn't make it. He wound up coaching for a couple of years and finally packed it in, because he was already in 82. He was already 28 years old.
Wow.
So, but
okay,
he
well,
did
John,
have his moment.
John Flynn, if you're still around, I'm figuring that you are. You have been duly recognized.
That's right.
By the Batman and Robin podcast for what had to be your moment of glory. You know, if the Orioles had gone on to win the World Series, I think John Flynn actually really would have gotten his due.
Yes.
Okay.
It's a footnote to history, but we're all about footnotes.
We promise some useless or semi-useless stuff, and we're coming through.
Let's go with obscure. That sounds so much better. It's basically the same thing.
You're right.
Better
not
spin.
Useless is too strong.
Yeah, right. We don't want people to be listening to our useless podcast. To our obscure podcast is, I guess, bad enough. I don't know.
Right.
Got a little chatty with this topic, so we're going to ask you to join us for part two of this discussion in our next episode. Remember, it's good to look back as long as you live forward. Thanks for listening.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, aka the Football History Dude, and I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know, that can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part. because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you gotta do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you gotta do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.